Yeah. Good morning, all. The first case for argument this morning is Smock versus Nolan. Mr. Stegall.
Thank you, Judge Baum. This is a Section 1983 First Amendment retaliatory discharge action. Plaintiff was a probationary police officer at the Illinois State Police. He was terminated based upon a polygraph examination that had a finding of deception. Principal issue on appeal, and the one I've raised, is whether there's a triable issue of fact on whether the defendant polygraph examiner, Terrence McCann, intentionally misscored the physiological results of a polygraph. As the court may know, but it never hurts to review it, what a polygraph exam is a test that...
It does hurt to review it.
Mm-hmm. What?
It does hurt to review
it. Okay, I don't have to get there. Good.
You never know.
Thanks for the feedback. The defendants raise a Pickering-Connery conic issue of a balancing test for public employee speech. But there's really no question of whether the speech is protected. The speech involved here was Smock's testimony before the Canton Board of Fire and Police Commissioners pursuant to a subpoena. This court has held in Wright versus Illinois Department of Children and Family Services that truthful testimony under a subpoena is protected speech in all but the most exceptional circumstances.
But that case also says that if supervisors believed after an adequate investigation the testimony was false, even if it was actually true, they could punish the employee on the basis of the investigation.
Yes, but this isn't an action against the supervisors as such. There is an official capacity action that comes later. It's against the polygraph examiner himself.
But what evidence do you have other than your client's sort of speculation and this and the other expert that you called? What other evidence do you have that he purposely skewed these results or misread these results?
His own testimony, Your Honor. He said that any polygraph examiner looking at this graph that's SA3, the physiological results, would look at it and score the same score reading that graph within a point or two, and certainly no variance less than 10. McCann also said that any polygraph examiner would accept that the range of inconclusive is a -3 to a +3. I hired Dr. Hans, one of the leading experts in psychophysiology and study of polygraphs. He studies the scoring and looks at it, scores it himself, and says that I've got a +10. He had a -24. Now McCann himself says this cannot occur through inadvertence or negligence. This is summary judgment, Your Honor. You have to accept that. McCann himself says that this can't be just a mistake or a differing technique, that inadvertence will not produce a misscoring, negligence will not produce a misscoring. What's left? Intentional misscoring. So the concerns that the Attorney General raises is, oh, well, you're just difference of opinion. They are present here by the defendant's own testimony. You have to accept that as true on summary judgment. This is as close in an admission as you'll ever get, and as you quite properly once quoted Lord Byron in an opinion, truth is stranger in fiction. We know, in theory, that a polygraph examiner for the police certainly is not incapable of intentionally misscoring a result. Now, short of a Perry Mason confession on the stand saying I did it, what more can I get? I proved that I asked McCann about the results, and he says it can't be misscored through inadvertence or negligence. And if Professor Hans comes up with a score that's 4 or 5, even 10 off, maybe. This is 34 points. Hey, now, Judge Mann, I think, with respect, he just misread this. He said the best that Hans can say is that while the result, the technique that McCann used, there's criticisms of it. Well, no, that's not what he said. What Hans said was this technique used by McCann was biased to produce a deceptive result. But that didn't happen here. I scored it, and he wasn't deceptive. So that's the background to it. He wasn't criticizing the method. We're accepting McCann's testimony as true that he couldn't do it through negligence or inadvertence. How else could he do it?
Do we have any linkage, assuming there was a misscoring, even one that was by design by McCann's student, that to connect that to the speech issue?
Yes, very much so. One, the very questions asked on the polygraph were, did you tell the truth at the Canton Board hearing? So obviously the polygraph was motivated by speech. The more greater concern is, well, was there any causal connection between this? The investigators for the Criminal Investigation Division of the Illinois State Police found, did an investigation, interviewed all the people involved, and found the evidence was inconclusive. That's why they asked for the polygraph. They said, and I can point out the particular items of testimony involved, was what's the issue involved, and I think this is important to look at the overall context, is Smock's testimony was 4 or 6 pages of a transcript out of 16 charges in a Canton police lieutenant. The charge of discipline in which he testified was that the officer, the lieutenant Ayers of the department, acted inappropriately to other officers using the word fuck and acted in a demeaning manner. Now, this is hardly an egregious course of action. Smock said he was with him in the car, and he didn't. Now, the evidence was that, inconclusive from a bunch of people, another participant in the event in the other car says, well, I heard Lieutenant Ayers say the obscenity, and he acted in a demeaning manner to this. Now, the CID investigators, Sergeant Knezovich and Officer Hall, found that, well, that's a classic credibility question between Richards and Smock. You know, the demeaning manner is, they quite properly and commendably conceded, you know, demeaning manner, that's in the eyes of the beholder. And, you know, maybe Smock said he didn't hear him say the obscenity. You know, maybe there's a difference. The other item was a Lieutenant Putnam, who triggered the investigation, gave a statement that's saying that Smock told him on May 10th, before he testified, that he heard Lieutenant Ayers use the obscenity and that he acted in a demeaning manner. Yet Smock testified pursuant to a subpoena under oath that he did not, in just the opposite manner. Again, classic credibility question. The two officers, Knezovich and Hall, say our investigation is inconclusive.
Let's go back and we come to the public concern issue.
Yes.
This is internal police, the police versus police as far as factual. We don't have the public involved in the literal sense of a member of the public. This is an internal matter, right?
Players are all police.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
So what would be the parameters of an internal investigation such as this that would not reach the public concern issue?
Well, I think where you take the public concern issue, Your Honor, is there's a subpoena issue. Now, the state can't say on one hand that we'll force you to testify pursuant to the power of contempt and imprisonment, and in the other hand of an employer say, well, we're legitimately punishing your truthful speech because you honored our command to give that testimony. I think that's a very important public interest. Yeah, it's on internal police matters, but any time the state issues a subpoena to give testimony, That's a pretty compelling answer.
Well, in a paramilitary setting, such as a police force,
sure.
Is there really a meaningful distinction between being commanded, Mr. Siegel, and a subpoena? I mean, I appreciate...
Yeah, I agree, Your Honor.
I just wonder if that can be the comfortable dividing line.
I think you're right, Your Honor, and I don't think you can limit to a paramilitary situation because we all know and a subpoena can be issued by a pretty signature in the federal court, and we get them in blank from the clerks in the state court. So a subpoena isn't the dividing line. It's coming forward and giving the testimony under oath. We're talking about the integrity of judicial and quasi-administrative here, quasi-judicial proceedings. So that's very important. Now, my gosh, we know, I mean, one of the reasons we have all these trappings I've told clients is that, you know, we want to scare people to get them to tell the truth. And that's a very important public interest. You've got all these pressures going on in this small town and all these politics. I mean, that's an important public interest, Your Honor, even though it's anytime you call and bring oath. And I think we need to protect the integrity of the courts.
Thank you, Mr. Siegel. Ms. Wonder?
This is a case in which the plaintiff has failed to supply any evidence in support of his theory, and therefore the summary judgment was proper. The theory, of course, is that Officer McGann intentionally sabotaged the polygraph scores for the purpose of punishing the plaintiff for the content of his speech before the Canton Board. And the record failed to support a reasonable inference on either aspect. There's no evidence that Officer McGann intentionally sabotaged the test scores, and there's no evidence that he took action against the plaintiff for the purpose of punishing him for the content of his speech. And the plaintiff even said in his deposition, I have no information that the results of the polygraph were predetermined. In the first instance, there's no evidence of any intentional misscoring of the test scores.
Well, what about his comment that, you know, because the other examiner and the whole scoring issue and the differences of opinion related to that and McCann's comment about the differences? I mean, how do you view that evidence?
The deposition excerpt,
right,
of Officer McCann really adds nothing here, because in the excerpt, McGann is saying, well, he didn't believe he could misscore through inadvertence or negligence. I mean, he was really saying, it's actually a very innocuous comment. He's saying, I don't think I made a mistake. But putting that in the best light to the plaintiff, what he's saying is, I meant to score the exam the way I did. But intentionally scoring it doesn't create a reasonable inference that he intentionally misscored it, that this was purposefully skewed. He's saying, this is how I meant to score the exam. This is the way I scored these. And there's no evidence that he ever scored another exam by a different method. We have that statement saying, this is the way I did it. We also have Professor Hunt saying, well, I used a different method and I came to a different conclusion, which then we have a disagreement among practitioners, which doesn't create a reasonable inference of any intentional sabotage here, let alone for some sort of improper purpose.
Well,
Ms. Wonder,
Mr. Siegel, I thought I heard to say that he wasn't challenging the methodology. It was that even as accepting that methodology, you could not come to such a deviant score. Or am I perhaps not correct?
Well, what Professor Hunt does is go through. First, he criticizes the methodology that's used. He says, well, I think that approach would be biased to produce a deceptive result because of weaknesses in the read approach and because it's too short.
Right.
Notwithstanding what I think are these biases, I go through and apply my method, and I conclude that this person has testified cheerfully based on the approach I use.
Dr. Hahn, and I suppose perhaps I should ask Siegel too, does Dr. Hahn's testimony say even using the McCann approach, it still is off?
No, he uses a different methodology called the Utah approach. He doesn't even express any familiarity with the Reed approach. It's also worth noticing here, I think ultimately these disagreements among experts are somewhat beside the point, but the court should be aware that there is actually yet another expert opinion in the record, which agrees with McGann's conclusion that the result is would show deception and untruthfulness, and that's the opinion of Mr. Buckley, who is the president of Reed and Associates. And
so he obviously used the Reed method.
And he agrees with the conclusion of deception. He doesn't do it, actually, he doesn't even do it entirely the same way as Officer McCann, but he reaches the same conclusions, and he then takes issue with several of Professor Holtz's interpretations of the raw data. And just so there's no confusion, that comes to be in the record, originally admitted from the record on appeal. What had happened was that these plaintiffs had made a motion in the district court to supplement the record in the district court with his expert materials, which had not been attached to the summary judgment motion. The defendants responded to that motion in the district court, also attaching additional materials. None of that made it into the record on appeal, but the record on appeal has since been corrected. So we have a range of expert testimony. None of that leads to an inference of intentional misscoring, and Officer McGann's deposition excerpt really adds nothing to that analysis, because he's simply saying, this is the approach that I considered it proper to use.
And did it come out during his testimony that this was the procedure he followed all the time when he did polygraphs?
Well, it certainly didn't come out during his testimony that he had ever at any time used a different approach than the one that he does.
So there was no question put to him related to that, I take it.
Whether
or not this was the standard test that he gave and then he used the same procedures, that just wasn't covered, period.
Not that is included in the summary judgment proceedings to my recollection, but there's certainly no evidence of any using a different procedure at any other time than the procedure he would use here. And then, of course, we have a whole second component. This intentional misscoring would have to, in some way, relate to be a punishment for the content of the speech before the Canton board. And there is absolutely no evidence of that. There's no evidence that Officer McGann had any interest in the subject of the testimony before the Canton board. McGann found out about this when Investigator Hall requested a polygraph. He found out what the subject was of the test was supposed to be, and he administered the polygraph, as he routinely does. That is his job. It's plaintiff's theory that certain Canton officers, this Lieutenant Putman, were offended by Smock's testimony and were out to get him for the testimony in some way, but there's absolutely no evidence in the record that would connect Illinois State Police Officer McGann with Canton Lieutenant Putman, or anyone in Canton, or anyone who was supposedly offended by this testimony. So this sort of, this was a conspiracy theory, is the kind of speculation without any sort of definite concrete evidence that that can't survive summary judgment. And the plaintiff has suggested here, well, there really is some connection because the context was an Illinois State Police investigation, but the investigation was consistent with the state police's policy of investing allegations against cadets and officers, as they would do in such a situation. There's nothing to suggest there was anything unusual about the investigation. The plaintiff suggests that, well, this particularly disciplinary charge against Lieutenant Ayers and Canton, about which Smock testified, well, that wasn't really a very important incident. But from the Illinois State Police's perspective, they've received a complaint that one of their cadets may have provided false testimony in a police discipline hearing. That, of course, is something that the Illinois State Police is going to take very seriously. I mean, obviously, truthfulness is an important quality for police officers. And ultimately here, it's the employer that gets to decide whether this is something that is important and should be taken seriously, and not the plaintiff. So merely because there was an investigation doesn't lead to a reasonable inference that therefore the investigation was rigged, and therefore the purpose was to punish the plaintiff for his speech before the Canton Board. Lieutenant Putman himself had no involvement in the investigation other than to give a statement when he was asked to do so by the investigator. The court also sort of raised the question here of whether we are dealing with protected speech. The district court assumed for purposes of argument that we were, because there are these glaring problems with proving any intentional misscoring by Officer McGann for the purpose of punishing him for his speech. So the court just started out saying, well, let's just assume that this is protected speech. We can assume that this is a matter of public concern, and we can assume that this happened to be truthful. There is still no First Amendment claim because of the lack of this sufficient evidentiary predicate that there was any retaliation on the basis of the speech. Whether the speech is in fact protected raises, I think, some more difficult questions. The truth or falsity part, obviously that's not directly at issue because it's sort of in the eyes of the employer here. If they thought it was false, they could make a determination on the basis of it. And then we have the more fundamental issue. Is this even on a speech of public, on a matter of public concern? And again, it has been assumed all along, just for the sake of argument, in light of the evidentiary problems here, that it wasn't a matter of public concern, wasn't really a basis of the summary judgment motion before the district court. But since it is a question of law, I mean, the court, it's something the court can consider and I think can be debated, because even though this was pursuant to a subpoena, the testimony itself would still need to involve a matter of public concern. And while this was a larger disciplinary proceeding against the lieutenant, several of the issues did involve the officer's conduct in relation to matters of the public. One could draw the conclusion that this particular issue is really more of a sort of internal police matter about appropriate behavior between police officers that doesn't even rise to the level of an issue of public concern. So that would be, as I said, a legal issue that is part of the plaintiff's case that is yet another basis in which the claim fails. I'd like to speak briefly about the other claims. There's a claim against Director Nolan, which of course would fall with the plaintiff's First Amendment claim against Officer McGann. The claim would also fail even if the First Amendment claim against Officer McGann was allowed to go forward, because it's really sort of a free-floating request for a remedy. I would like an injunction. I would like to be reinstated. That is not attached to any constitutional violation alleged to be committed by the director, and that's not sufficient. It's a claim that the director has failed to take corrective action, which is not enough, as the Grunetsky case makes clear and the cases that are cited within it. The state law claims against Officer McGann fail for the same reasons, this lack of an evidentiary predicate that is the problem with the First Amendment claim. Just briefly look through here. The plaintiff raised the issue of, well, you know, what more could I get? What other evidence could I present? And the answer to that is, you know, some type of evidence that, as the district court had suggested, that Officer McGann had, you know, typically used different scoring methodologies, but switched just in the case of the plaintiff, you know, coupled with some connection between Officer McGann and this alleged disapproval of the speech by certain officers in the Canton Police Department, you know, something that would have drawn in a connection and suggested any sort of motivation here that rose above the level of being purely speculative, are some types of evidence that could have been obtained had they existed and would have been very relevant. So essentially, because there is no reasonable inference of intentional misscoring, and no reasonable inference that this had anything to do with the content of Officer McGann's, excuse me, with the content of the plaintiff's testimony before the Canton Board, the summary judgment was proper. Are there any questions that I can answer for the court?
Apparently not.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wunder. Ms. Steele?
Your Your Honors, I have to go back to what McCann himself said. In terms, it's in the appendix, in terms of misscoring, it's tough to say who is right if they give something of a value of 1 as opposed to a value of 2 when they're that close. There may be a variance on a particular response or question, but it will be very, very little. Anything over 10 would be a substantial variance. Overall, yes, talking about the total score, Hans agrees with him. It's not something on interpretation, Cross. You said it really. You couldn't misscore by inadvertence. The same would be true of negligence. Correct, assuming you're well-trained, speaking for myself.
Yeah, Mr. Steele, but do we have apples and oranges with this Reed and Utah approach?
No, because McCann tells us we don't. He says any polygraph examiner.
No, but he didn't use it. Any polygraph examiner using the Reed method as opposed to the Utah method.
What he was asked is, you wouldn't expect it to be off by a factor of what would the range between polygraph examiners going off the same chart? I asked him about any polygraph examiner.
But you didn't ask about any method. There's no other methods, and he said so, and he didn't like the Reed method.
He didn't. We didn't discuss method in McCann's. McCann didn't even.
No, we're talking. All right, we didn't discuss method. You paused on the threshold of a brilliant discovery. Had you discussed methods, you would have found it, might very well have found it, that two different methods would produce different results, because your witness said he didn't like the method used by McCann.
But he said it made no difference because the score was that far off. And what I'm saying is, I'm not required to make McCann the defense for him. And I asked him in his deposition about all this, if there are these things about the different methods, McCann can make his defense. He's a policeman, been at it for 25 years. He's well able to. And it certainly doesn't lie in
the... Any comment at all about the third expert who's...
Yes, Your Honor, I've looked. I don't think it's in the record. What I amended the record with was the test. There was a... I didn't get the proper...
I'll go look, too, just to make myself
happy. Yeah, and I'll be glad to address it. I don't think that's at all in the record, Buckley. They did file something, but Judge Mim certainly never considered it.
Was it in the record, or did he consider it?
I asked for leave to file it.
Is it in the record?
There is something in the record by Buckley, but it was never made a part of the record by the district court. In other words, he didn't grant him leave to file it, is what I think the record
but
is.
But it was accepted in the record? Was it filed and accepted in the record? Was it filed and was that included?
There was a motion to include the Buckley
testimony. Was that motion granted?
I don't think so, Your Honor. We'll have to check, but I'll certainly tell you. I mean, the record will show, and I don't want to, you know, I'll look at it, and it says what it says. But that was never considered by Judge Mim on summary judgment. And... the other thing I got to say about, well, we haven't proved what's necessary, the Attorney General suggests, is some sort of proof of a systemic behavior. Well, that's a one-free bite rule. In other words, you can retaliate against somebody and intentionally misscore a polygraph as long to one person.
Well, but it would speak to whether we had an inept examiner with an anesthesia as opposed to a particularly biased one.
Oh, certainly. And it'd be nice if I could show he'd done this to everybody for 25 years, but we're not going to show that.
Right, but did you ask? You didn't even ask if this is a method he had used all the time. Or what was the best method to be used in this, you know, sort of knowing how polygraphs are viewed by the courts and that, you know, they're not admissible in most in criminal actions and all the problems with polygraphs. He was not asked about that either, whether this was the same method he used all the time, whether the Reed method was better than the Utah method, even after he said, I don't like the other method, and, you know, I prefer the Reed method. There was no exploration of that whole topic, correct?
Now, Your Honor, I wasn't getting into this dispute between the Reed method and the other methods because I wanted to see what he said every polygraph method or examiner did. If McCann had said, McCann himself did not raise these distinctions between the Reed method, and it doesn't lie in this court or in the federal courts to raise it for him. I wanted to avoid that, as I should as an advocate.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Wonder. The case is taken on.